On today's show, Dan Tui can't wipe his own baby's ass.
Or can the baby not wipe his ass?
No, I think she can't wipe his ass with the baby's ass.
Oh, we get an exclusive from Andy Farrow's 35-man squad with Beard, Connors, McCluskey.
And skinny Roy Keane turns down the chance to live on Shrewsbury Lane with Barry.
Shrewsbury Road.
Road.
Joe presents Baz and Andrew's House of Rugby, together with Guinness.
Hello and you're very welcome to Baz and Andrew's House of Rugby here on Joe together with Guinness. Spring brings changes on its wings, just on cue to lift my soul. Happy faces come to sing, don't want to grow old. Ever hoping to be free, filled with life's complexities. Now dead summer's come to call, I'm going to really reach and all.
Scene.
Do you like it?
I loved it. It's lovely.
That's my song for spring because I feel it's here.
Is it an original?
That is a Hermitage Green song.
Oh, yeah.
Live On, one of our first ever songs.
Oh, wow.
You can find that on YouTube or iTunes or all of the above. And it has a lovely guitar riff in it as well.
Quite a somber tone, though, for quite what should be, despite coronavirus, an exciting time of year.
Yeah, but I just felt it with the sun this morning and I felt like just there is a change in the air. I also got new tackies, and that is what spring has ultimately brought.
Yeah, I have heard so much about these tackies, and you and Earl Z, the only two people I know, call them tackies.
It's a Limerick thing. The coronavirus virus. Its reach is long and wide and far and wide. Because I ordered these before Christmas, and they didn't arrive. So I got on to Nike, going, where are my runners, trimmed.
Nike are like, listen, we've got bigger fish to fry here.
Yeah, well, they were
we've got more important issues than your gutties.
Yeah, they were made in China. The man on the phone was like, these were made in China and the factory has to be closed down because of the coronavirus, so...
Well, I paid good money.
Yeah, it shut me up fairly quickly. But so they arrived 3 months later. Very happy with them. They have on the back...
Maybe... Oh, wow.
They're my children's initials on the back.
Oh, really? On the right one, the AB, I thought was the reaction whenever your dad caught you watching porn. Ah, bad.
So it says an AB on the back, which is now a bar. It was a bar. And then on the other one, it says Mick the Baby, because I didn't want to just have M, so I said Mick the Baby.
Yeah. Wow.
It's a bit douchey, but look, it's... you had an option to put their full name on it, which I thought would be a bit too much with Annabelle on the back of them.
Definitely don't do the full name.
But I was thinking, right, it got me thinking about the names. When you're picking the baby's name, you're just picking it's grand. But then picking a name for someone is so, it's a big deal, isn't it?
Yeah.
And it's struck me now that like your name is so important, but it can be ruined pretty quickly by someone else of the same name who does something.
Annabelle the Murderous Dog.
The Murderous
Dolls.
Dog. Yeah, but that's a movie, so it's kind of, it's okay. It might be moved on. But like, let's say Harvey Weinstein. Like, imagine you were called Harvey Weinstein and you were just an accountant working somewhere. And you're like, or anyone called Harvey or anyone called Weinstein at the moment.
Yeah.
It's as bad as Hitler, like.
Yeah.
It's just like, that name is gone. No one is ever going to call their child Harvey Weinstein now.
No.
No?
No, well, no, I mean, maybe, no, obviously, no. But, I mean, if there are Weinsteins already, then they're already kind of, it's in the family. Like, are they going to change their name away from Weinstein?
That's what, I wonder how many people are like, geez, I'm going to check. Because imagine going to Starbucks now and be like, what's your name, Harvey? Oh, so you're just going to go with Weinstein?
Let me guess.
But either way, yeah, they're kind of fucked. I was kind of trying to think this back to rugby then. Wasn't there Michael Jackson that played for Ulster? Was there?
Did you play for Ulster?
No, I thought that was...
Michael Jackson's the guy at Black Rock.
Oh, yeah.
He's Paddy's cousin. Yeah. He does a lot of after-dinner speaking and stuff. Okay. He's hilarious.
Is he?
Yeah.
Yeah, that... I mean, he must find the name. He must use the name then.
I'd say he does. He must get a bit of value. Although he's had his name his whole life and Michael Jackson's been big his whole life.
But he was big and he was
He would have been using
good.
It differently.
He'd
yeah.
Be like, yeah, Michael Jackson. Then it's like, oh, shit.
Oh, no. Yeah.
Yeah. Like me and Fla passed a van on the road this morning that was R. Kelly. Uh-huh. And it was R. Kelly's plumbing or something like that. And I was like, Jesus, I wonder how's his business doing these days?
Yeah, yeah. Because if it's a toss-up between R. Kelly Well, unless there's unless the other plumbing business is Michael Jackson.
Yeah, you're grand.
Like, might as well stick with R. Kelly.
Yeah, you're all right. Andrew Trimble,
there's no issues with Andrew Trimble.
I was thinking about you as like, you're safe enough unless you, Andrew.
Yeah.
Pretty, there's no one that's...
No, it's too normal.
Unless you marry a princess and you become Prince Andrew. So just stick with Anna, don't marry
well done.
A princess.
Well done.
I also think Jackie Trimble, your son, that's quite a 1970s soccer player, like...
Jackie Trimble!
Yeah. Girl from Jackie Trimble!
Were there any of them had any... sexual allegations? Because as long as there isn't them, I think he's grand.
No, I don't know if Jackie Trimble was a soccer player, but it just sounds like.
Yeah, I know, yeah.
Like, no, he probably was back in the 70s. And then that got me thinking about the coronavirus, because apparently Corona beer has suffered like 135 million drop in sales, which is insane.
Yeah, well, I heard Corona dropped 8%. Yeah. Again, I don't know if that's the same, but... Footy went down 9% in a week anyway, so everything's getting tanked.
Yeah.
But yeah, Corona's getting the blame.
The Corona's the band. Like, I was wondering if people would stop going to there, because people are that stupid that they go, I'm not going to go to Corona's case.
Just in case.
Yeah, there's no diseases called Hermitage Green, thank God, as of yet. But yeah, it's pretty disastrous. But there is going to be a big decision made today on whether the rest of the Guinness Six Nations goes ahead. Who is having that meeting today, Pat?
World Rugby.
Yeah. World Rugby are stepping in. So definitely the Ireland Italy match call off this weekend. France, they've said that there's not going to be a gathering of over 5,000 people or more. Is that?
Right? I believe, yeah. Indoors, I think, is what they said.
Yeah. Oh, what a disaster.
Yeah. So last time this happened, Pat, they replayed, or as it, what was the outbreak? Was it foot and mouth?
Yeah.
When was that?
2001.
And then they replayed one of the games in like October before the November.
Yeah, I think it was Ireland Scotland. Yeah.
Yeah. I went to that.
Really?
Yeah. I was 18, and myself and my mate from college just had nothing to do with September, so college hadn't really kicked off properly yet. So we said we'd go, and we were so broke that it was cheaper to go on the Thursday to the Tuesday. Do you know, if you fly on a Friday or a Saturday, flights are quite expensive. So if we went on the Thursday, flights were like 20 quid. So we went on a Thursday to Tuesday, and we stayed in a hostel for a tenner each. And we'd no money, so we just kind of ambled around town for a few days. But he...
Hungry.
Hungry. We were eating Pizza Hut pizza and just drinking cheap pints. But on the Saturday night, we met these American girls, right? A group of American girls after the match. And he fell madly in love with one of them, right? And then we went home and went to bed the next day. He had organised to meet up and go on a date with her and her friends. So I was like, where are we meeting him? And he said, at the Gap, outside the Gap. And I was like, okay, where's that?
What do you mean?
I said, outside the Gap. I said, where's that? And he goes, it's downtown. Do you know, below Edinburgh Castle in Edinburgh, there's the big gap, gap in the ground.
The train station's right beside that, I think.
Yeah. There's a big hole, like a big gap, valley.
Yeah.
And he was like, that's the Gap. And I was like, what? That's not the... Surely she means the Gap shop. And he was like, no, there's no Gap in Britain or Ireland. That's only in America. I was like, are you serious, man? And he was like, yeah, it's the big gap in the ground. That's what they call it. I said, fucking hell. He was so convinced that I was like, right... So we went down there, and I was like, this thing's like a kilometre long. So I was like, where are we going to go? He said, there's a middle part. So we picked the middle part. We just stood there.
In the middle of the gap.
12 o'clock in the middle of the gap, waiting for these girls. And there was a guy playing bagpipes standing next to us. And he was just baiting out that Scottish tune.
Yeah, that generic
one. And then the Braveheart one, he had two songs.
He was like the DJ and Father Ted, just started again.
And he was getting awkward even looking at us, because everyone else is kind of moving on quickly, but we were there for like 2 hours. And
he's like, are you here to meet the Americans? They're at the Gap in the shop.
So they never showed up.
I imagine it's like it's like the scene that the Joker runs through after he kills the bird. And he runs through and there's like homeless people on fires everywhere and you're looking for this date with these Americans. Mm. They're like, they're at the shop.
They're at the Gap, yeah. So we're there for 2 hours, then eventually I was there. He got so ratty, he was like, fucking Americans. And then we went walking around town, we got a bag of cans and we're walking around, and then sure enough, there was the Gap shop, like smack bang in the middle of Edinburgh.
And they were still waiting.
No, they were long gone. That's my one memory of the foot and mouth. And Ireland got absolutely hammered that day as well.
That sounds like a really depressing few days.
It was good.
Yeah.
It was good crack, I think. When you're that age, you don't really give a shite what you're doing. So it's weird though
that I don't remember that at all. It's just totally disconnected from the rest of the Six Nations. Mm. It wasn't an important game, was it?
Well, I think Ireland had done well in the Six Nations, and then I don't know whether they still had a chance of winning it. They could have finished second. But it was a bit of a...
Like, there was a couple. Do you think it was the only one that was left? I think there might have been a couple of matches left, no?
I think that could have been it, yeah. That was nearly spelt the end for Gatland then as Ireland coach as well, because they got hammered by the All Blacks then soon after, like, and then those two bad defeats together kind of nearly the end of the road for him. It was a bit of... I think that the... There's never been a championship not finished. I think that was finished 2001 and 1972... That was when I think Scotland and Wales refused to play us. That was during the Troubles, like, and England came over, kind of show us solidarity. It'll be interesting to see what happens. Everything's changing day by day as well. So
yeah, they're better off. Like it's. I don't think they can. There's no argument.
Just ditch it. Ditch the whole thing.
For now, and then maybe have a look. They have to play them.
The Italian game's cancelled, obviously, but surely all the Italian supporters, that's the issue, the Italian supporters coming over, they're all still going to come over anyway.
Would you get in the plane if you were coming from the north and knowing that it's an infected place and you get on a plane, you're bound to pick up something, you know, sooner than if you were just sitting at home?
Yeah, but the Italians coming over, I think, because they feel they are the infected place, they've got...
Might as well have it.
They're like, well, listen.
There's still no. You're right because there's no travel restrictions yet. So we're not stopping anybody from.
And more generally, then just people are traveling all the time anyway. Mm. Yeah. So the games. Like, I'm not saying it's the least of our worries, but it's only one of our worries.
Yeah.
I don't know. I wouldn't travel if I was an Italian supporter. I'd be like, nah, better off.
You just sit there. Sniffing, being sick, blowing your nose.
Just fucking wiping to sanitise my hands constantly.
Yeah.
will we get out our scientific coronavirus expert, Jerry Flannery?
Yeah.
I believe he has a PhD in it. We also have to talk about the weekend's Pro 14 action, and we'll look ahead to the games that are going ahead next weekend, as of yet been cancelled. So, yeah, let's get flout.
You're listening to Baz and Andrew's House of Rugby on Joe, together with Guinness.
Okay, welcome to the show, Fla.
How are you, lads?
Currently in June, the European Championships are on in June in Ireland. The Guinness Pro 14 finishes on June 20th. There's matches in the Aviva on the 15th, 19th, 24th and 30th. The game must be held in Lansdowne Road if Ireland, Italy is the only one that's cancelled. It must go ahead in Lansdowne Road. So the only available date left is June 27th, which actually wouldn't be bad because they're heading to Australia the following week for a tour. So it'd be like a warm-up game.
So that's fine as long as this is the only one that's cancelled, though.
Yeah, as long as it's... Yeah, exactly, as you're right, Trimby.
Yeah.
But if they cancel more, it's just going to be a backlog, isn't it? Particularly in the worst time in a World Cup year as well, when there's already a lot of congestion in the season.
Yeah, it's a long season, isn't it? June 20th.
Mm.
I can't see it happening. Maybe October. That could be, potentially an option as well.
As in wrap it around into one where they would have say a November series.
Mm.
Yeah, potentially. That's what it did in the past. But it's just, it's kind of an anti-climax, isn't it, really?
Mm.
That game isn't really going to be that important anyway, I suppose, as long as there's no more games. If, like, the France-Ireland game the week after,
could be big, yeah, playoff. Yeah. If that was to be played then, and then like someone was crowned champions of the 2020 Six Nations in November, then that would be okay. Don't worry about it because the next Six Nations is only a couple months away.
Mm. Yeah,
that'd be weird.
Sure, what? There's nothing you can do, man. It's the virus is.
Mm. But surely the virus will still be raging by October, will it not?
I don't know. I'm not a scientist. I hope. Hopefully not.
My role
in the show as a scientist. they just gotta find a place to play it. And
I think you're contractually obliged to talk rugby, and when there's no rugby, you talk viruses.
Okay. Well, I didn't do my homework on it. So,
they're contractually. What's the word I'm trying to say?
Obliged.
I can't even get through contract. Don't even get me started on obliged. Contractually obliged by sponsorship to play them, right? Because if you're a player and if you're the RFU, maybe not the RFU because they want, they probably want the gate. But if you're a player and a coach, you're kind of like, let's just move on, right?
Yeah, but it's there's a lot of cash in it for the RFU. Mm. It's more than they're contractually obliged. They want to play it because there's a lot of revenue in it for them.
Mm. And players want to play as well. It's a chance to play international rugby.
In October, November, like they would still.
Yeah, I'd be keen.
They'd be up for it.
Yeah, I think so, Trimby.
Yeah, yeah. But
even if it's not a dead duck, you know, if, let's say, it goes on now and France win the Grand Slam, and even if Ireland end up playing the last two games and they've nothing to play, like, what's the?
I can see players being more reluctant if there's four internationals in November. Pat, is there
just three? Ireland just have three, yeah.
Yeah, but yeah. Even that, I suppose, even say if this France and Italy, if they're both put on at the front at the start of November, five internationals in a row, 5 weeks in a row, guys would be reluctant. I'd say, be a heavy old workload, wouldn't it?
Yeah, but sure, they can surely.
It's all hypothetical, obviously.
The players are there now that they can. They can split that game time up.
Yeah.
Look at all the lads that stood out over the weekend, all these young guys, you know. It's an opportunity for them to play.
Are we getting into that?
Let's. Ryan Baird, I suppose, the first and foremost.
Hat-trick. For an old gallop, didn't he?
Hat-trick after 60 minutes. I was saying to Flan on the way up, his physique is like, it's so, his back is like that wide, his arms like flat, compared him to Retallick for New Zealand. He's got big long arms, big stride. You know, as much as James Ryan is an animal and the phenom, we were calling him before, and a big guy, Baird is even more impressive as an athlete.
Yeah.
What is he, still 20 years of age?
Yeah. He's been talked about for a few years now. That definitely over it, probably a couple of years, people have been talking about him and saying he's going to be the next James Ryan or... If he's anything like James Ryan and he looks like he's got something special about him, then you've got two of the, like, if he gets to the level that James Ryan's at, obviously he's got a lot of work to do between now and then. Mm. But that's ridiculous second row combination, isn't it?
You've been watching him
at the World Cup, and his ability to offload, he's got, like you said, we've got the long levers. I mean, you could see when he made the break for his try, you could see that real high knee lift when he was running. He's a real athlete. And I watch him at under-20 level, and he's really comfortable on the ball. You know, you watch a lot of Kiwi forwards, and they just look comfortable when they're running at full speed with the ball. And I think, like, if you're looking at the depth chart for Leinster going down, there's only a couple of positions where they're probably, you know, looking a little bit like light. And down the line, I suppose, with Scott Fardy and Dave Toner's age profile, like Baird coming in there is just, you know. Baird coming in like him and James Ryan. Now, whether he's going to be a six or whether he's going to be in the row, but like when you get a guy and you pick a guy in the second row and he can score a hat-trick for you like that.
He's played six a lot as well, has he?
I think he's played six as well, yeah.
So a lot of chat last week after the English match was Itoje, obviously, and how much damage he was doing defensively, just, and he's kind of a similar build, long limbs and gets in the way and just pulling and dragging. And a lot of talk was like, we don't have players like that in Ireland. And... you know, that's what I've heard a lot of pundits saying that, but there is one clear example of a guy we have. Itoje was fast tracked straight into the English setup, I think, the year after playing 20s. You know, is that what a guy like that is, what you need? Just throw him straight in there.
I think Baird seems to be more of an attacking player, like less of, I think Itoje is very, very destructive and disrupts an awful lot. I think Baird has his upside is more on the attack side of things, what he can do. I'm not saying he can't do the other side, but look, I think...
But getting him in, getting him the exposure,
yeah,
early
absolutely.
On.
Yeah, absolutely. Like, play him as
same thing
as
they
possible.
Did with Will Connors, Ballacoon, Ronan Kelleher. Mm. Who was the other one? There was four of them. They named their squad and then they named four development players. Like, he would be a guy, be a good contender for that.
Yeah, absolutely.
The sooner he gets, he's obviously getting exposure to Dev already. The sooner he gets more exposure to the international setup and what's required, stepping up to that level, then the easier it'll be for him to do that when he gets his chance.
Oh man, he was outstanding at the weekend. Yeah. Leinster were outstanding. You know, if you went through the Pro 14 last year and you were looking at like the strongest sides there, Glasgow would have been one of the strongest sides, and like
15 internationals as well,
yeah,
at the weekend.
And for Leinster to put like 50 points on them, man, it's crazy, yeah. You know. And Leinster looked comfortable all the way through it. Like, I was incredibly impressed with Leinster's defence and how they very, very rarely burn two in the tackle. They'll always, like, and Will Connor's a real good example of, like, coming in with a dominant chop every single time. And the other players around him, like, even if it's not a dominant chop, if it's just a two-man double where two guys are coming in, like, if it's in heavy traffic and they're coming in high, the second man will always bounce out unless there's a real opportunity to add time to the ball. I see the second guy always bouncing out. So Leinster are just committing one into the tackle, or else if they commit two, they're adding significant time so that they're giving their defence an opportunity to get set, or else they're turning the ball over. Mm. It's against teams like Glasgow that are going to play from everywhere, you know, it's so important that you're just keeping bodies on the defence is basically winning the numbers game. How many numbers do you have in your defensive line versus how many attackers they have? Leinster's so good at that.
Yeah,
so
they kind of Glasgow started from the get-go were trying to run the ball, even though they had a big wind in the first half. I didn't even know. I mean, after a game like that, all you focus on is Leinster's attack. From my point of view, I was just so blown away. But in hindsight, thinking back, yeah, you're right. They'd one try that one down the left-hand side that kind of came from a ball that's spat out of the rock a little bit. So he's kind of.
Is it Kyle Stain?
Yeah, Stain's try.
And they actually lost two players in a tackle in that one because two guys came in. I wasn't sure it was on the short side. Two guys came in and both engaged, and the ball kind of almost bobbled out and just two passes, and Stain got away. Mm. But apart from that, it's very rare to see them like losing two bodies in the tackle, and that's why their defence. Mm. I think they're averaging around 13.5 points a game. That's all they're conceding. It's phenomenal.
Yeah. And then obviously attack-wise, putting 59 points on one of the best teams in the league as well. they're just, well, we've said it so many times, tempo, ability to create quick ball, and then the variety of play. Like in one phase of play, you'll see, and it doesn't seem to be a prescribed pattern they're playing. It'd be a pick and go, Luke McGrath will take a short runner, then he'll go to 10, and 10 will have someone out the back, he'll have someone on his inside. He'll have seven or eight different variety of play that just happen like that. Every time McGrath has the ball, he's got different options all around him. Like when you said last week, when there was a good point when if you took a screen grab of the Irish setup last week, Murray would have one option all the time. That was it, to go to 10, and it was pretty easy to see what they're doing. You watch someone like Leinster, and even when they get slow ball after a couple of phases, they can still recreate quick ball with a variety of play. And they just guys seem to know their role. Like Joe Tamani, how good is he? Yeah. Come as a signing for them, like just taking the right option. James Lowe coming in off his wing, farting hands out wide. They're just so slick to watch.
Could be the emphasis on phase play and unstructured kind of starting. Just starting phase play off, just throw the ball in. It sounds like Lancaster that he puts a bit of an emphasis on that, whereas the shift is from Schmidt's emphasis, which was set piece starters, maybe restarts, but everything came from somewhere. And there was a bit of emphasis on phase play, but that seems to have been changed quite a bit. That's a big change, I think.
Mm.
They just look so confident. They put the ball anywhere, everybody will get into their shape, and they've just got two or three different options, and they seem to communicate really well. They all know where everybody's supposed to be. Oh no, they know what options there are. It's all options on. They just look very composed.
You're right, Trimby, because if you look at it, if all you're focusing on is the starter play, and if you're focusing on that, then it's only the players who are doing the starter play that are actually, you know, that are actually getting the reps in there. But when you're focusing on unstructured and you can let it play, you could have three teams of 12 all working against each other, two teams of 12 working against each other, and then rotate it that someone else comes in. And if it's all unstructured, everyone is working on their decision making and attack and defence all the time. That's what you were saying, Baz. And I listened to Lancaster, some of his podcasts, and he was talking about that's how they structure their sessions. And it seems to be that's why it's not down to one or two players there. Everyone just seems so comfortable.
Mm.
And then the other thing Scott Fardy said actually a couple of weeks ago was the young fellas, they step up because they've all got. Ryan Baird's got Dev to look up to, or Scott Fardy.
Mm.
All the tens, Ross Byrne less so, but Harry Byrne and Kieran Frawley, both of Johnny to look up to, and they all they're just getting such good influences from a young age. You know, they're coming in as 19-year-olds, getting great and a one-on-one kind of time with Johnny, and seeing the way he gets on in the team environment. And Scott Fardy was saying someone like Frawley just dominates the team whenever he's 10. Mm. Just dominates the team meetings and takes everything. And you know that's the rich get richer. You know, if you're in that environment, you'll continue to learn, and then the young fellas get better, and then the young fellas again get better. So they're untouchable. I can't see this ever ending with Leinster. They're just untouchable at the minute.
March, they've left to lose a game. It's pretty incredible.
Yeah. Mm. Liverpool last the weekend, it was kind of up to the two of them who's gonna break first. Hide. But that's actually, Pat, I really enjoyed your piece on Roy Keane at the weekend, who had a go off David De Gea and Pickford. Their terrible goalkeeping. Keane is a maniac, man. He was like, he's not a good goalkeeper. He's just not a good goalkeeper. And Graham Souness is like, he's the English goalkeeper. And he's like, he's not a good goalkeeper. I was like, fuck, he doesn't take any prisoners, man.
Did he back it up, though, or did he give a reason? Or did
he makes a lot of mistakes, I think. So there's a great line that he said. The guy says, I think David Jones is the guy, but he was saying, but there was a lot of dip on that Bruno Fernandes shot. Like, it really was moving. And Keane goes, of course it was moving. Somebody kicked it. But he does, and he's giving out about like how late they are. He's almost like the goalkeeper showing off not diving early. He's like, I'll get to it. And then he misses it. Like, you know, it's like such arrogance. But he's a terrifying man. Do you remember he came in to us?
Mm.
Back, we played against Sale in 2005, I think, in Manchester.
Was that when you targeted Shabal?
That was the away match, the first one. And Kidney brought Roy Keane in on the Friday night.
Mm.
And we were all in the team room. It was a surprise he came in to talk to us. And we were all eating pizzas and stuff, weren't they? Were we?
Might have been
just
pizzas,
a terrible example of how we should prepare in front of someone like him. And when I think back, he gave us a chat. We were in the middle of playing a game of Monopoly. And I've had one interaction with Roy Keane my entire life, and this was it. And I'll often be just sitting somewhere, just at home, next to my wife and family, and I'll just go, even though it was 14 years ago, it's like, fuck. So we're playing Monopoly, and I was playing with Freddy Pucciarello and Dowling, I think, and he came in and the game had to stop, and he started talking about everything and anything, and someone asked him about anything he does outside of rugby, and he said, he does a little bit with the guide dogs and stuff. And I think John Kelly asked him about, does he ever get into investment and property? And he said, maybe a little bit. And I was like, any interest in buying Shrewsbury Road?
Oh, you go.
And he just goes, no. Like that, and then that was it. Like, it was horrendous, man.
Oh, no.
Like, sure, you have one opportunity to say something to me. But yeah,
he's a tough crowd, though.
He is, man. Yeah, he's.
Like, when you throw that out, more often than not, that'll be good. That'll be well received
from you. He's even called me a goat.
I know,
because you were kind of representing us. Like, I remember he walked in and he was like looking around at us, and there's like pizzas everywhere, and we're all like these. he was I remember how small he was, man. He was so small, and we were all like these fat rugby players. I was like, oh man, he must be looking at us like we're idiots.
Should have asked him about that. What's it like being so small, Roy?
he was saying, do you remember he said, like, I stopped eating meat and all that, and he said, like, the dietitian the nutritionist in United came in and, you know, said his body fat was a bit too high, and then he went completely the opposite, like, and he became obsessed with his diet and said he got, like, unbelievably, because he was taking a piss out of himself, saying, like, obviously you can see now I'm massive, like, he was joking because he looked so small. And then Baz did that joke and we're all like, oh God.
Yeah, it's terrible. And Dowling came out with something worse. Asked him as himself and Patrick Vieira, still good pals or something. And that kind of saved me a little bit because it was even worse. But, I think Paulie definitely took on a lot of what he was saying, wasn't he? Because I think everyone used to call Paulie Kino after that. He's got even more.
He's called him psycho anyway, yeah. He was kind of like a guy who was setting the standard, wasn't he, for what Irish sports people could do abroad, and constantly demanding more, and that's why everyone looked up to him with such awe. Mm-hmm. And he's still a massive personality now on the TV. I wonder, does he ham stuff up a little bit when he's on TV, or is that genuinely him? I don't know.
I wonder what he's like behind the scenes. I wonder, is he lovely?
No, like a lot of players have come out and trashed him, like anyone that's worked, not anyone, but a lot of players that have come out and worked him, saying he's very difficult to work with, he's very hard on him. But again, it's standard, isn't it? You'd wonder, like, it's for this generation, maybe it mightn't work as a coach, but you'd wonder, will it swing back that way again?
I don't know.
It'd be quite tiring being around someone like that the whole time. Mm. Quite intense. Mm.
If you're winning, you don't mind.
Yeah.
You'd mind less, anyway.
Yeah, I remember talking about Alfie Inga Haaland, like, where he ended his career, like, and he was like, yeah, I did it, you know, like, what, like, that kind of violence that you don't see on the pitch anymore.
You do. We see the Scarlets, and the Scarlets and Munster again.
That was gold.
Poor JJ.
Poor JJ.
He's minding his own business, wasn't he?
Took a punch to the throat, kind of, wasn't it?
The side of his neck, was it? Yeah, like, JJ was kind of like, what did you just do? Did you just punch me?
Yeah. JJ took it well. I know it didn't really land, but he still took it well. And then it's like your man went, oh no, that's so embarrassing. I'm going to get a red for that. Yeah. And he goes, right, may as well.
Go again.
it was Witchley, wasn't it? Mm. Straight on the nose. He took it well too, actually.
Like, such a sign of the times. Like, I watched the Caribou Cup final, sorry to go back to football yesterday, but there was a hard enough challenge, and it was like, oh, it would have been nothing 10 years ago, but it was a yellow card. Could have been a red card. It was crazy. But he won the ball, but it was just because it was a hard tackle that everyone was saying, you can't do that anymore. And then when that happened yesterday, like, that was like, there was uproar in the Munster match on Saturday, whereas that was run of the mill a while back, wasn't it?
Was it? He did throw a pretty blatant punch.
Yeah.
A very, very poor blatant punch, and then threw another one. So I think you nearly need to be sent off for that, man.
It wasn't like, you mean when we were like 15 years ago?
Yeah.
When we were starting out.
Yeah.
I think it was slightly more common, but it still would have been an actual punch.
Yeah, true.
Yeah.
But even like, probably 10 years, 15 years before that, I'd say it was. Mm.
And another sign of the times, I was kind of hoping someone would come up and pull his rat's tail. JJ might be, pulling his rat's tail a little bit. Like.
It's the second week in a row. It's kind of. I think the conditions wrecked the game. The conditions wrecked the game. But yeah. I thought, you know, stood out, like, was Kevin O'Byrne. To me, I thought, like, Kevin O'Byrne is... probably.
I thought we were still talking, fighting.
Oh, sorry. Okay, I go back.
Second week in a row, and I was thinking, hey, did someone get punch last week?
No, the zebra winger Bruno got sent off for leading with a forearm.
Yeah,
and
Peter Robb gets sent off.
Yeah. It's just, you just can't do it now, man. Yeah. You know?
You see that a lot still, and it doesn't get picked up. I'm quite wary of that now, the forearm thing, because it's fucking dangerous. Like,
yeah.
So I am glad they're clamping down on that.
Yeah, it's. But
what's your favourite fight ever? Do you want to buy time? I'll tell you what mine is.
Yes.
O'Connell and Cuddmore.
Mm. That's the one that just pops into my head straight away.
It's one of the best ever.
It was two heavyweights, like.
Yes, it was class, and it looked like Cuddmore. He went on the pitch intending at some stage, I'm going to get into a row with O'Connell. Just picking on the biggest fella, you know, like as if you arrive in prison or something, you know, make a name for yourself. And then, from what I remember, maybe I remember this incorrectly, but Cuddmore was punching him in the process of punching him like two or three times. And Paulie was like this, like getting punched whilst appealing to the touch judge.
Yeah.
Isn't that right? He took two or three digs before he then got stuck in.
Then got stuck in. And therefore, Cuddmore got a red and O'Connell got a yellow.
Yeah.
Mm. Clever. Well, I'm going to hit you, but I'll wait till I get you on the ground until it's a little bit more of a defence thing as opposed to standing there just punching someone in the face.
Yeah. Still, probably O'Connell's yellow was harsh then.
Still throw digs, I suppose.
Yeah.
And I have to defend myself.
It was, because he came up and his nose was bust up. It wasn't near his teeth.
Yeah.
But I think he kind of got the better of him in the end, didn't he, Paulie? Cuddmore's like a fucking WWE wrestler, like.
He's what?
He's like a WWE wrestler.
Yeah.
So he reminds you of. Or was his brother a wrestler or something like that? Today?
No, was there someone was a debt collector at some stage.
A debt collector?
A bailiff or a debt collector.
One of his brothers?
No, we played against Canada and sitting beside his brother. His brother had a little moustache. Uh-huh. And he was like, oh, I'm Jamie Cuddmore's brother. I was like, oh, yeah, nice to meet you. But he was real small compared to Cuddmore. But I think either Cuddmore was, I think Cuddmore might have been a debt collector or a bailiff or something like that. I could be wrong. Hmm. But he was hard. He was a hard player.
Yeah.
But it's pretty stupid, man, doing that in, he's just got sent off. Like, O'Connell was sharp with it, in terms of, looking at the touch judge and going, this guy's throwing punches, and then was able to mail into him then.
Yeah. So that Claremont team were unbelievable. Even though they went down 14 men, it took...
Mm.
I think Niall Ronan scored two wonder tries that night to kind of got us the win in very late. But they were, that was... I remember feeling like, fuck, this team are the best team we've played against.
Yeah, and then you watch them this year against Ulster, man, and you go, well, where are they now, you know what I mean?
Oh, I don't... In Belfast, they were terrible.
Yeah, they were terrible.
But they were handy over there, though.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah,
their form's been up and down all year.
Mm. But they seem to be one of the clubs that seems to have more of a European more of a Anglo-Saxon influence. Mm-hmm. Is Anglo-Saxon, is that the right word? They're less, they're
less French.
They had Schmidt in as well. As a consultant.
Yeah, yeah. Schmidt and Vern Conner,
he was a coach that year.
But they just had him back in there.
Oh, did they? Yeah.
As a consultant, yeah. Oh. And they beat Agen away, apparently. Yeah. Not Joe was hanging his whistle up.
Not a hole.
Yeah.
The thing about the French... The skill set that the players have, the individuals have, is incredible. It's just if they're always playing, if that's all they ever play against when they're in France, then it's whoever's got the best, whoever plays that style of rugby the best will win. But I've started to see now teams like Cast from a few years ago and Lyon focusing more on the kicking game and bringing in structure and getting a lot of return from it, But
that's a really good point. I was thinking about this, when a lot of people talk about French flair and the rugby, they kind of talk about as if that they don't have a lot of, that they're not
organized
enough or not even organized, what's the word I'm looking for? Dogged enough or rough or tough enough. But French rugby is tough, man. It always has been tough. It's the lack of organisation that they have. When they're kind of everyone's putting so much emphasis on Sean Edwards now, and he's getting them really riled up and stuff. I don't think that's what it is. I think it's the organisation.
Yeah.
Having a kicking game and having them organised.
Instead of having 15 individuals on the field, it's just roughly organising those individuals. Unstructured, everyone knows when the game goes unstructured, France, or they come alive and they're brilliant. I think it's just making sure that they're all fit, and then giving them a rough roadmap that all the players can work to, because you don't want to take away what they're best at. But you can't go on and only be good in unstructured rugby, because if the weather is bad, or if a team is going to play, is focus as hard in the kicking game, you need to be able to manage that. So I think that's why some of the coaches that have gone across there, like Joe, and have had an influence in places like Claremont, they're very competitive then at European level then.
It's hard to. I remember I was chatting to whenever I was finishing up. Turned out my back was hanging off me, so I couldn't. I was considering going and playing a year in the second division in France, and I chatted to Louis Luda because he played a couple of years at Agen and went really well, and then kind of made his way over to Ulster. And him and his wife loved their time in France, so I was asking him about it, and he was saying you need to go over and you need to embrace the way they do things, but he said do not try to change them. You know, because he knew that I like to play rugby. I like to be in an environment with Joe where things are organised and structured, and everybody kind of is pragmatic and planned. So that's what I like. That's the way I like to play rugby. That always got the best out of me. And then Louis was like, "Don't try and change the way they do things because you'll never change." You know, whereas someone like Joe, who's very obviously exactly that style, he got massive success with Claremont. John O'Gibbs is a similar style with a slightly more appreciation of kind of French. I remember him saying before, one time he was saying about Claremont, how he said you knew how they were going to perform by just the atmosphere and the buzz and the, you know, what the crack or whatever it was in the team. There was just an atmosphere where you knew they were going to perform or not perform. So he had slightly more of that appreciation. But it's I find French rugby so fascinating because they've got so much potential, but they just do so much stupid stuff and they're so disorganised. Even against Wales, obviously a big game, France away to Wales a couple of weekends ago, but there was about a 10 or 15 minute period where Wales had them on the ropes and they started doing what they do best, just giving away stupid penalties, making stupid decisions, talking back to the referee, you know, we're the victims. And then they were under the pump for a while. Yeah. And I just see they just go back to that every now and again. That's why I remember we were saying, before the World Cup, France are back. Then the next weekend, they get hammered.
Hammered by Scotland. I was like, no, they're not.
Yeah, but like we all love French, the way proper French rugby's played. Toulouse, like in around kind of 2007 to 2010, you know, the way they play is class. It's incredible to watch. And we all would love for them to get back to that, but they won't get back to that unless they continue, as they look to be doing. They could win the Grand Slam this year, obviously, but it's someone like Sean Edwards. I'm surprised that he's had such a big effect because, as you say, he's the guy who brings in get the boys off of the game, get them psyched up, get them off the line, smashing boys. But there must be a lot of detail in what he says as well, because that's the bit that counts. That's the bit that France needs, I think.
Yeah.
Does this make sense?
Their tackle entry is night and day to what it is before. Like the players, their body position as they're entering into a tackle now and how many dominant tackles they're making. And they seem to be aggressive getting off the line. So you can definitely see that they've been coached in that area and they've taken it on board, which is testament to the players as well. You know, coachability is a talent to have.
Jeremy Davidson's another one with Ulster, and he's had massive success with Aureliac in Pro de Deux and then now with Brive. And he's mad. Some of the stuff he's had an ACL reconstruction before they perfected the procedure.
Right.
So he's got a massive scar down his knee and it hardly bends. Like his legs
are so long.
Yeah. So he limps the whole time.
Yeah.
But doesn't stop him counter rocking when he's a coach in sessions. Comes flying in from the side and he's like, "That'll happen at the weekend, lads."
Yeah.
So you're going,
"Did he did he coach you at Ulster?"
Yeah. He's mad.
Was he a forwards coach?
Yeah. Yeah, then I heard stories about him at Aureliac because get your pack up for the game, get them psyched up. I remember here at one stage, they were doing they were scrummaging his machine, and Jeremy was standing on top of the scrum. Not on the scrum machine, on the scrum, boys' backs.
Just making sure that they've all got flat backs and stuff like that.
Really? What?
I'm not sure.
Must be 120 kgs, man.
Yeah. You know,
Jesus.
I'm not sure if it was for the technical reason or the let's just get these boys up for it. I don't know. But
whatever works.
Worked unbelievably well for him. Yeah. He's been flying.
You'd wonder, is it the new generation of French players and those younger lads, are they a little bit more professional than, you know, Dan Tuohy retired last week and I saw a few things he said. Again, it's that stereotypical thing we hear about anyone that comes from here and goes over there, and they're just, and they don't train. There's lads taking breaks during weight sessions to go out and smoke fags, and they're coming in, they're stinking of fags, and they're drinking during the week, and it's just so loose. And like as Louis said to you, don't try and change it. That's the way it is.
Yeah.
But that can't, you know, as an organisation, that can't last. Surely. So now you'd think that the younger players coming through, that it's maybe they're taking a little bit more of a professional view on it.
Yeah, maybe. Mm. But Ntamack in particular looks like he 24/7 should have a cigarette in his hand. he doesn't look like he doesn't smoke.
Yeah,
I don't know. I've never heard anything about him smoking, but I'd be very surprised if that fella doesn't smoke.
Halftime, yeah.
I've never seen a man shoot a cigarette more.
Yeah, just a little whiskey at halftime.
Yeah.
Harry.
Yeah.
As you guys were talking there, Ireland announced a 35-man squad for, like, assuming this France game is going ahead. They're all going to meet up anyway for training this week. But the big one actually is Baird is in it. Not a development player, he's just in the main squad.
Wow. Anyone left out?
Baird was in originally, wasn't he? Is it
development player? Yeah,
and he was.
You were mentioning who else was in.
Tom O'Toole was the other one. I forgot.
And then Harry Byrne was in as a development player as well. So yeah, he's in the main squad now, and pretty much everybody else who you'd expect. Jack O'Donoghue's back in. Dave Kearney's in again. He scored 14 tries now in the Pro 14. McCloskey's back in. And then all the regulars as well. Billy Burns, Will Connors is in as well. So that's the big one, yeah.
As a development?
This is just, straight up.
So there must be, like, there's a few out, obviously, with injury after last week, but they must have dropped... No, did they drop anyone?
No, because it's like a 35-man squad, okay, so you can pretty much have everybody. They said even Delan and Dave Heffernan, when they get back from South Africa, are going to link up with them as well.
Well,
so everybody's in, but just the Baird, I suppose, and Will Connors are the main one, because they're part of the main squad now.
Exciting. I thought Craig Casey was unreal from Munster at the weekend.
Again. Yeah, I thought he was brilliant.
Kevin O'Byrne had a great game, and I'm a massive fan. His little tip-ons and his skill has been, that's moments of skill he's shown this season have been unreal. But I thought Craig should be man of the match the weekend.
You've been talking with him for a while.
Yeah.
And I just haven't really spotted it. Yeah. Now the weekend, he just looked like... I remember you saying before, there was one game, it looked like Munster were kind of just taking a little bit of a beating. Mm. And they needed someone like Craig Casey.
He was against Leinster before Christmas.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And I could see it. I could see exactly what you meant there. Mm. He looks like feisty, fired up. Mm. He looks like someone who's a bit of a leader. Mm. He's class.
Yeah, he's like every kick he had, I felt, got a return that positive return. His passing was flawless in a game like that, where obviously conditions aren't great and new combinations all over the pitch as well. And he's still just zipping the right pass. Me and Flower talking on the way up, and we were talking about how he doesn't make the right decision, but he'll make something of it. He's so small. He's ducking under. I mean, he made two or three breaks where he made 7 or 8 yards when you thought he'd gone blind and there was no other option, but he still makes something of it. He backs himself.
He's worth two penalties for high tackles every game.
Yeah, yeah.
He's got good footwork, and then people are just trying to react and they're going to clip him in the head because he's so short.
Yeah.
It was good, man. It was good because the Zebra game the previous week, like, I was excited to see Jack O'Sullivan and to see Craig getting a shot, but Munster didn't play very well, so they didn't really get to shine in the game, and Craig hurt his hand in the match. But I thought Craig was excellent. I thought Jack O'Sullivan's the quality of his moments were really, really good. Like, there's a lot of focus around the likes of Baird and the likes of Doris and Deegan, but Jack O'Sullivan has all the ability that those guys have. Like, he just probably lost a year through his ACL, and he just needs to get as much. He needs, when he gets opportunities, he needs to take them. And I think probably no one really stood out for Munster in the Zebra away game. Probably JJ and Fineen. After that, then some of the replacements, Kevin O'Byrne, Jeremy Lachman. But after that, no one else really stood up. But I thought Jack was really good at the weekend. I thought Craig was really good. A lot of good things to take out of it, like, you know, because it was the game was brutal from the conditions. I just saying, like, everyone is looking at Niall Scannell and kind of going like, he's been harshly done by now for the national side selection wise, because he's such a good scrummager. And But I think there's, you know, there's good competition there at hooker and now at Munster as well. You know, like Kevin O'Byrne is probably not physically as dominant as a Scannell, but like his, the little bits of football, like playing the little tip-ons, dropping the ball back off on the inside, and he had a phenomenal piece of skill for Sweetenham's try in Zebra the previous week. So I thought Munster it was a good performance to get a result there. And did you make the point about Gavin Coombs, how effective he was when he came on?
Uh-huh.
Yeah, it was good.
Yeah. He's a strong boy. He's a bit of a beast. Ulster obviously didn't have a game. There are reports in South Africa that Marcel Coetzee. Good to see you, Coetzee. That's all I remember.
Good to see you, Coetzee.
Is maybe looking to head home. You don't think so?
Well, he signed up for 2 more years.
All right.
but that's what I know there was some chat there today, but.
Yeah.
The Blue Bulls have signed
Vermeulen,
and they're trying to get back the centre, Jesse Creel, as well, and Coetzee. I don't know about Creel, but...
Is that Rassie reaching out, you reckon, trying to get people viewing? I've been loving his Twitter stuff. Like, man, that must... Like, obviously, everyone knew how effective he was as a coach, and how everyone kind of... praises him that's worked with him, but fuck, that must have been so interesting to him. Would you have had presentations like that?
Yeah, he'd all coaches do that, man. Yeah. You know what I mean?
Yeah,
all coaches do that, and it's a skill set of Rassie's.
It's the one that, like, I was a dickhead when I was a Springbok, and how he breaks that down, how he talks about when you start out, you're desperate to become a Springbok. You're desperate to become a professional rugby player. Then you get it, and it becomes incredible, and you're delighted. But then you get the big contract, and then eventually it kind of seems like every rugby player will become entitled at some point, and they become a dickhead. And it's, you are up to the people around him to tell him that he's being a dickhead, and that you like, I was a dickhead, I was an asshole for 2 years. And it was my eventually player said it to me, and I'm not talking about me. That's how it sounded. But he said his wife told him, his family told him, and then it clicked, and he went back to being himself. That's magic. Like,
yeah, it's a good skill to just be able to empathise, because a lot of things are just normal. It's just a normal cycle that people go through in life.
Yeah.
And he's just calling it out and saying, listen, I went through it, and probably some of you lads are going to go through it as well. But I think it's like... All coaches do that. It's like, because Rassie's won the World Cup now, there's a certain, you know, there's a real aura on what he's saying. Is, you know, it's a real skill that he has.
Imagine your wife took you aside and said, listen, Barry, you've been a dickhead for a while.
Yeah.
Yeah. You too. You've been a dickhead.
Yeah, I'd struggle, wouldn't it? Yeah.
Yeah. What do you mean, Nana?
You're entitled. There was a part of it that was the latest one he put up last night was, what was it yesterday? What?
Sacrifice,
yeah. And when you stop putting yourself in that battle on the pitch, that's when you know you're off. It's that kind of stuff.
Mm.
It seems like that mindset is what got them to win the World Cup, you know.
That's what South Africans are like, man.
Really?
South Africans are just so they're hard, you know. They're a hard nation. Do you not agree, Trimby?
Yeah, absolutely.
They're hard, and they have you know, they want the majority, any South Africans I've come across want to get better. They want to improve.
They just love that they love the collision.
It's Percy
is a great example of it. He just loves it. Cannot wait to climb into someone, the smash boys in defence, to carry hard. They love it. Like,
yeah. So I think it's just tapping into that and keeping it going. So yeah. I think that, you know, if you know what makes the room tick, and you can tap into that, and the people in the room in there trust you, and you have a good relationship with them, I think you're halfway there.
Coaches ask a lot of players, you know, the physical impact that this has on players' bodies. I don't know, you touched on too, you know, with like the nerve damage in his elbow. He was lifted off the restart, and then whatever, the lifter kind of clattered into the winger and he fell and wrecked his, fractured his elbow or dislocated his elbow. And then his hand was kind of facing the other way, and then he's got like lasting nerve damage. You know, that was his 9th surgery, I think he said in the statement. The statement was hilarious, by the way.
Couldn't wipe his baby's ass because he was getting shit all over his hands because he couldn't use his hand properly, like, because it's such nerve damage. And
yeah, did he wipe his own ass?
I don't know. Maybe you have to hold the baby and wipe.
Oh, yeah, or yeah.
Ass with your own ass. It's
just... couldn't hold his baby's ass.
yeah, something like that. Which just becomes a little bit more real then. Like,
yes, exactly,
know,
yeah.
You know, you're not just a commodity, you are just a commodity.
Yeah.
At the end of the day. And yeah, it's such a balance to write, to be able to talk like that, like Rassi is, and get that passion on board. But then at the end of the day, it's becoming it is a business, and it's a commodity. Like even with Sky Sports coming in and potentially taking the Six Nations away from free-to-air TV, there's a lot of uproar over that at the moment, like where it's like it's bringing the game that further step away from being the, like, because a lot of what Dan Toohey said was how he hates the way the game has gone. It's lost all its value.
Because it's a business, not a game anymore. And because then they were starving the championship of finance, and then guys are playing for not that much money, but they're being asked to put their bodies on the line. I think he's got a very good point there.
He does. And you
especially whenever South Africa showed that the way to win a World Cup is to be unbelievably physical. So if that's what you're asking of guys, then I think you need to be aware of the impact that has or could potentially have. Toohey had 9 surgeries. I think I had 12 surgeries. You know, and I'm lucky. I haven't got too many issues. Started CrossFit there last week, actually.
Ah.
Yeah, and yeah. Wrists and back and all.
Did we get into that?
Yeah.
Man,
yeah.
How are you feeling?
Fine. Yeah, fine. Yeah. Touch wood. Feel grand. I'm just going to do it for a month and see how my back feels, because it was that operation on my back 1.5 years ago. Just going to see how it goes. But it feels fine so far.
Yeah. I'm loving it, but I'm the same. I haven't counted, but I had 10 plus surgeries, like on my ankles, and I can't really do the CrossFit properly. I'm feeling sore, I'm feeling broken. I know it's very technical and it's probably a bad comparison because you're fucking yourself by doing very technical movements under serious duress as well, so it'll take time, but my elbows, my shoulders and stuff are aching. Like, and I feel like I retired early enough, but if you're going to 35 and battering yourself, and as you said, guys in the championship who are now having their wages slashed and having to go out and do that.
Yeah, I don't think... I remember sitting on the bus before the World Cup in 2011. What was it, the one? 2015, maybe? Whenever Tommy O'Donnell got his hip dislocated.
Yeah, 2015. Yeah.
2015?
Yeah.
In against Wales.
Wales, yeah.
Pre-season friendly. Hip dislocated. That's a car crash. I remember sitting... me and Zebo were sitting behind Tommy and we were like... No, we weren't actually. We were talking about him, sorry. And then someone said he's in a bad way, like hip dislocation. And then Zeeb says, like, we don't get paid enough for this kind of stuff. You know, and like, you make that, it's fair enough. I think that's a good point. But it's not sustainable, obviously, if wages continue to go up. But I think the style of the game has to change, because if the style of the game continues to go towards be more physical, be faster, be more powerful, win more collisions, then guys will pick up more and more injuries and it's less sustainable. You know,
you could injure your hip playing for your club as well, just for your amateur club.
Way less likely. There's nowhere near the same level of athleticism playing for Korean. Although I was wrecked.
Yeah, no, it's a fair point. Like, you're putting yourself in there. I mean, there's a lot of people who say it's a tough job, it's tough going. But I mean, at the end of the day, the money is good when you get to become a professional rugby player in Ireland. You know, you're only going to be contracted within the 4 provinces, and the money is good, essentially, isn't it?
Yeah.
I mean, I never came out of it going, I was robbed or whatever.
No, absolutely not. And most, I think most people who play rugby don't necessarily play for money. Like, that's not the massive incentive.
Yeah.
It's certainly one of the incentives, but I think guys who play rugby love the game and have grown up playing the game. And,
Do you think it's a fight that he's fighting a losing battle when you start talking like that, and that the game, it's, you know, it's, it, we've lost all the traditions of it, or we've, is it a kind of classically when a fella comes out of a game like that, and he may have not have his career may not have gone the way he wanted it to go, because he obviously had some regrets talking about not playing for Ireland and maybe not. I don't know, he said kind of when he went to Irish camp, he didn't give as much as he thought he should have and stuff like that. He might have a lot of regrets, and now he's come out of the game and he's just like shitting on it a little bit.
But he balanced it up though. And he said, to be fair, rugby's given me great opportunities and the values that I, you know, identify with in rugby that I love. That's why I fell in love with the game. It's important that we kind of maintain those and not let, you know, all this kind of, all the business of rugby kind of overshadow that. So he was saying rugby's given him so much. I think he was very, he acknowledged okay, that. Yeah. He was quite balanced, I thought. But yeah, I think he talked about how he got, did he get 12, 15 caps, something like that? And he regrets not kicking on and getting 20, 30 caps. He felt like, too, he was incredible for a 2 or 3 year period. He was brilliant for Ulster. On and off the pitch, brilliant. He was a great lad.
Was he?
Yeah. He still is a great lad.
Yeah.
Despite his nerve damage.
Yeah.
He's a great
still
lad.
Still shake his hand.
he was always the one at the back of the bus. He was holding court. He was like, he was dominating people, telling stories, slagging people, doing impressions. Yeah. He was the heart and soul of Ulster for a period of time. Then he had to move on.
Yeah. How hard is too hard a handshake? Guy shook my hand the other day, and he tried to break my hand by shaking it. I'm afraid.
That's too hard.
I'm afraid to meet him again. Like, what is the fuck?
Did he get right in, or did he grab your fingers?
He got right in and like squished.
Well, that's something, I suppose.
But you know the way you hear, like, oh, there's a good handshake, good strong handshake is so important, and it tells a lot about a person. It's like, well, that tells me that you've read something that said you should squeeze someone's hand to show them that you're a really good person, which means that I don't like you. So, note to all our penguins, they've got a little flap. They just flap them back and forth. Penguin of the Week, actually. We have a shout-out to Penguin of the Week.
Have we got one?
I don't know. Do you
have one? No, I haven't been keeping up my New Year's resolution.
Ah.
Deleted Facebook from my phone.
Pat, anyone?
There was, I'm trying to think of one, but we definitely retweeted it. There was a lovely, someone did a sketch of penguins.
Oh,
in
yes. Oh, Jesus. Yes.
Right,
yeah.
I forgot about that, yeah.
That was amazing.
Did you see that?
McKnight?
Yeah, I'll go and have a look at it, because I retweeted it anyway, so.
Yeah, the penguins were like lifting another penguin in the line out, which would be really tricky. Flippers would be just like slipping up the penguin's back.
Oh, you're right, yeah. Matt McKnight, yeah.
Matt McKnight. Has he got good? Flippers got little suckers on them, no?
No.
Definitely don't. Sorry, I didn't think of an octopus. okay, Mac McKnight?
Matt McKnight,
yeah. Mac McKnight.
Yep.
Jesus.
Mike the Knight.
Matt McKnight, you are 100% Penguin of the Week. One of, and a great, talented boy.
Mm-hmm. Keep him coming.
We're going to take a break for a few minutes. Pat, you caught up with Irish women's player Emer Considine about her role in Tackle Your Feelings campaign last week. And we've got a little 5-minute clip of the two of you chatting.
And you're doing something that's going to make yourself aware. You're here, like, Tackle Your Feelings today. And there's a launch of a new, it's a wellbeing app, or it's a kind of a new element, something that they've kind of kicked on and they keep adding to the app as well.
Yeah, so the Tackle Your Feelings campaign is just, I suppose it's taking control of your well-being, and the app is a great way to do it. It's really user-friendly, and it's not just about having mental health issues, it's about managing yourself and managing life's daily stresses and life's daily struggles, that you don't have to be down all the time about it. It's sometimes it's just about being grateful, or it's about there's a gratitude section, or sometimes it's about people acknowledging the positive relationships in your life and being able to write down 2 or 3 things. There's elements in it where you can log your process, and you can log, you know, goals for the week, whether it's, you know, some self-care, whether it's taking time for yourself, whether it's to try and get in some extra mindfulness or some meditation. Really user-friendly, and it's got all the resources in there that if you are having a down day, or if you're having a stressful day, that you can kind of relate back to it. And it's Like, I find that I write a lot of stuff down in notebooks, but then I lose those notebooks and I don't know where did I write it down, or I have lists everywhere. But in the app, it allows you to, I suppose everyone has their phone on them 24/7. Like, I'm never without my phone. So it's readily available on your phone. You can take notes, you can make your own journal, and it's very personal to you. And you can use it any time that you want.
There's a nice video that accompanies it as well. There's a nice one as well with James Lowe there last year. But maybe if you could get you maybe to explain a little bit of the story that's behind the video as well.
So I suppose the story is about, I suppose, a difficult time in my life where my dad passed away, and not how it shaped me as a person, but almost in a way that's like why I'm here. And that, I suppose, it's just the way that I managed myself and the way that I coped through the relationships that I had, and through sport. The relationships in my mother and in my family were very close family, and I suppose you just put a huge importance on sport. And I suppose it made you realise that, you know, an awful thing has happened to us, but like, we just have to take control of what we can control, and what we can control is that we can live our life to the best possible way. We can be dedicated, and you can train hard, and you can take that mindset into everything that you do, whether it be work, school, training. And I suppose that's why I'm here. I suppose it's the message that you can control the controllables, and it's controlling the controllables and taking the good out of a bad situation, like being grateful for what we have instead of thinking about what you don't have. You think about how amazing it is to be Laoghaire Rugby for Ireland, or how amazing it is to have such a good support network, or such amazing friends and family. So taking the positives from a bad situation.
And yeah, like your father Cyril was 14 when you passed away, and you were on the beach with him when he'd had his heart attack. And you mentioned there as well that your brother being in Australia, there was a bit of a delay before the funeral. Like, even looking back now, is it just a fog in a way? Like, can you remember back then to that time and what it felt like? And
yeah, like, I don't think we realised at the time just how big an ordeal it was. I suppose now as an adult, you're like, God, it was really difficult. And it happened right in front of us, and Keith was in Australia, so he had to come home, and that must have been a difficult phone call. And like, you know how long a flight to Australia is, you know, that it's, there's so much that you didn't really think about at the time that right now you're like, God, that must have been really difficult. But I suppose we just got through it, and we got through it as a family, and it was through talking, and it was through, I suppose, like I said, through sport, that, you know, not that you had to try and keep yourself busy, but it wasn't going to change. It wasn't going to bring him back. Nothing we were going to do was going to bring him back. So we had to focus on what we could change, and you could, I suppose, put that focus on us and us being busy, and us being busy in sport and through school, and I suppose keeping us focused on things and having a direction in life and having a goal in life, and she did that really, really well.
Yeah, you spoke about your mum there, like she features a few lines about her. You're saying it's in their line that I want you to be as good as I think you are. Isn't that the line?
She says it all the time. So before every game, she'll text us, both Ailish and I, because at the moment she's in the middle of her season as well, and it'll be as good as your mother thinks you are. And you could have had an awful game, and she'll be like, no, you did great. I was like, mum, I had 4 knock-ons, and I was awful. And she's like, no. So that's why I say it, and that's why she says it, because genuinely, like, whatever we do, she thinks we're great, even if we've had an awful game. But I suppose it's great to have someone like that you can always go back to, who thinks that, you know, no matter how bad a game is, she's still going to love us no matter what. So,
and do you get that love of sport? Was it from maybe your mum and dad mixed together? Like, were the two of them into separate things? Or did you get your love for, like, GAA or rugby from both of them?
Yeah, well, GAA, I suppose we grew up playing that. Dad would have played football underage, and mum would have played camogie. So there was sport in our house, but also we're from West Clare, so, you know, it's a huge GAA background and huge GAA area, so rugby wasn't a thing really until I moved to Dublin. So, but we would have watched rugby, and like, we're a sports mad family. Keith would have been, my brother would have been he played football as well, and he's the reason that we played football. Like, he was 9 years older than us, and he was kicking a ball around when we were able to catch and kick. He had us doing it, so, you know, he's another reason why we play sport. But Keith would have always had interest in rugby games, and you'd always have the Six Nations on the weekend to watch it, even if we didn't play rugby or really understand the rules. It was a really big sporting family, and like, they'll be flying over to our games. We flew to Adelaide last year for Ailish's grand final. We weren't sure there was ever going to be another one, so we booked flights on a Tuesday and we flew on a Thursday. You know, so sports mad is definitely a way to describe our family. Like, they were up in the lash and rain and hail last weekend, and they'll be at all my games. So,
okay, thank you very much, Pat. What a
terribly sad story, but I suppose the beauty of sport for Emer and her sister and her mum, I suppose, using sport to create a positive output for their lives. Unbelievable.
Yeah, yeah. And she was saying her mum is just a great, you know, pillar for the whole family. Like, and I think even there last year, Emer, her mum and her brother all went over to watch Ailish. They're playing in a grand final there last year. Like, so, yeah, what they've gone through and where they are now is kind of a credit to them, a credit to the mum as well.
Yeah. Obviously, Emer's not going to be playing this weekend with all the games in Ireland or in Italy being cancelled. But we do have to still predict our games for the Guinness Pint Predictor, our results for the weekend. Fly, you didn't do too well last week, unfortunately.
No, yeah. It sucked.
So we'll just explain the Guinness Pint Predictor is simple to get involved in. You predict the winner and the margin of the Guinness Six Nations every week, and if you're within 3 points, you win a pint of Guinness, and you can gift that pint of Guinness, which some people have very kindly done to us as well.
So we're playing throughout the championship. It's not too late to join in. Just download the Match Pint app and join our league with the league code HORIE.
Okay, and if we do fail every week between the three of us, we have a forfeit. Fla, your forfeit this week is... Pat?
Yeah, we were... the folks from RTÉ were in touch with us there. The current series of Dancing with the Stars is going on at the moment.
Oh, right.
So Aidan Fogarty, who plays hurling for Kilkenny, is currently being taught how to do some dance moves by Emma Barkley, great dancer. And she's willing to kind of give you a few lessons and maybe teach you the tango. So we'll try and set that up for you at some stage this week. And
is the tango, is that quite a basic starting point?
No, not really. It'd be tough enough.
Oh, good.
Tough
enough. Good.
Amazing. Yeah. Oh, okay.
What's her name?
Emma Barkley.
And can we finish with...
getting gunged as well or something?
A dirty dancing lift? With Emma on the bottom.
okay, yeah. All right, well, hopefully I don't stamp on this girl's feet and ruin her career.
That sounds like a threat.
Oh, Emma, just if you're listening. Okay, I actually didn't mean it as a threat, but now I'm thinking, oh.
That's a wonderful forfeit.
Excellent. Okay. Well done, Pat.
We've still got to predict our games for this coming weekend. So obviously no Ireland versus Italy, but we have Wales versus England and Scotland versus France. Let's start with Wales versus England. Trimbo.
It's Twickenham, obviously, isn't it?
No.
Oh, I mean, obviously. I'm obviously joking. So I'm at, still, for me, England by 9.
England by 11.
The forfeits have just gone through the roof here, so the pressure is added.
You do well to stick yourself in between, because you'll not be last.
England by 10.
You'll not be last.
Okay, then to make it fair, I better go first for the next one, and you go last.
Okay.
Scotland versus France. Do you stick by these predictions, by the way, when it comes to...
No, I changed them.
Scotland versus France. I'm going to go France by 14.
You're next.
The wheels are going to come off. France is... what's a French vehicle?
Citroën.
Scotland by 3.
Wow.
Crazy. I don't believe you're going to go with that. There's no way you're going to go with that. You haven't got the balls to go with that.
That's my spoof prediction. Now for the real one.
I'm going to say France by 12.
Okay. All right. Well, look, in the meantime, Fly, you get your forfeit done, and we'll see how those games go. And let's wrap it up. Thank you to everybody for listening and for all of you watching on YouTube. Hola. This has been Baz and Andrew's House of Rugby here on Joe, together with Guinness. Party on.
Party on.
You were listening to Baz and Andrew's House of Rugby on Joe, together with Guinness. Drink responsibly. Visit drinkaware.ie for the facts.